Chapter 11. Economic Security in a Changing World. When countries are struggling to break free of extreme poverty, the role of the state is clear: to help the population meet basic needs, food, safe water, shelter, health services, nutrition, and to invest in agriculture and in the core infrastructure, roads, rail, power, telecoms, internet, ports, to provide the foundations for private sector-led economic growth. As countries break out of extreme poverty and begin to acquire wealth, another public sector role emerges: social insurance. Social insurance expands the concept of social protections beyond the most basic needs to include universal access to an expanded range of health services, universal access to education services in addition to the primary level, including preschool, secondary, vocational, tertiary, adult, and job retraining, unemployment insurance, old age pensions, insurance against various natural hazards, and income transfers to households in the event of job loss, disability, or extreme poverty for other reasons. Peter Lindert has beautifully told the story of the expanding social outlays of the high-income economies in his comprehensive history, Growing Public: Social Spending and Economic Growth Since the 18th Century. Social expenditures on health, education, pensions, and social insurance for unemployment, work injuries, and job loss began in the late 19th century and developed in earnest in the 20th century. Germany's Chancellor Otto von Bismarck is often credited with having established, in 1889, the first old-age security system based on a payroll-financed public pension, partly as a tactic to deflect the growing mass support for socialism. Britain followed suit in 1911 with its own contributory pension system. Social expenditures in the high-income world went from nearly nothing in the mid-19th century to more than a quarter of GNP in most cases today. Claims and counterclaims on the welfare state. There is a long-standing debate about the extent of the social safety net. How generous should it be? Is there a point at which it gives too much and provides disincentives to hard work and personal initiative? That debate is very much alive today in the United States and Europe. The political right calls for tax cuts and reforms of the public outlays to reduce their cost and to target them more specifically at the poor. The left calls for higher taxation to finance a greater degree of social outlays and to expand protection beyond the indigent to all of society in universal programs. For the most part, however, this debate takes place without much evidence being invoked. It is dominated by ideology rather than fact. I hope to remedy that deficiency here. Interestingly, the debate has flared in the wake of globalization. As globalization has proceeded, the working class in the high-income world has suffered a relative decline in income compared with more highly educated knowledge workers, and two sharply contrasting lines of thought have emerged. Free market ideologues warn that competition in the international system has become even more intense. The perceived threat to a country's prosperity from overseas competitors means that all attention must be refocused on economic competitiveness and growth. Obstacles to business development and to saving and investment must be eliminated. Taxes must be cut and profits encouraged. A country's standing in the world economy will collapse if it is burdened by expensive social outlays. At the other end of the spectrum, proponents of social investment opine that social spending must be raised dramatically, precisely because globalization is tearing at the fabric of economic equality. The rising income gap between skilled and unskilled workers, for example, requires higher taxes on the richer skilled workers, if only to help finance social outlays for those who are left behind. Many economists have argued that the social safety net should remain limited, lest the incentives for innovation and risk-taking be diminished. Economist and political theorist Josef Schumpeter developed the very influential theory of creative destruction in the 1940s, according to which economic success inherently requires the failure of some sectors in order to make room for the rise of new leading sectors. New ideas are constantly entering the market, jostling with old ones, and often defeating them. The weakest workers, businesses, and industries lose in this process. Economic growth and development are thus inherently painful for the victims of creative destruction. In some interpretations, a social safety net will slow the turnover from lagging to leading sectors and frustrate the returns on entrepreneurship and innovation. A contrasting view, very popular in Sweden and some other social welfare states, holds that precisely because capitalism is so turbulent, a social safety net is vitally needed to win the public support for an economy in constant flux. The argument goes that without social insurance, the public would be likely to demand protectionism and non-market guarantees of employment. Another major criticism of the social welfare state from the right is that it represents a direct threat to personal freedoms. Economist Friedrich Hayek argued in his influential work, The Road to Serfdom, that large-scale involvement of the state in the economy would lead to the collapse of individual freedoms. Although he first aimed those criticisms at the centrally planned communist economies and their controls on industry, he later extended them to the so-called social democracies with their expensive welfare policies. The U.S. and European political right wing regularly depicts social spending as a threat to economic efficiency and personal liberties. Social programs are viewed as imposing an excessive burden of taxation on citizens and corporations. Expansive and expensive social programs are thought to undermine market mechanisms and to distort the incentives vital to healthy economic growth and performance. The idea is that the world will have winners only if it also tolerates losers. Markets should be left to provide the bulk of the services otherwise provided by the welfare state. The opposing view is that a large social safety net actually ensures confidence in the future, enables people to take risks, and also allows for a redistribution of wealth that prevents the most extreme economic inequality. Redistribution of wealth ensures that the most acute inequalities are avoided. While there will still be inequality, there will be no deprived underclass at the low end of the income spectrum, nor a wealthy plutocracy at the other.